I think, in terms of time, probably ought to move into the public hearing unless there's some question that you feel like you need to ask that is more unofficial in nature. Because once we get in the public hearing, this is my understanding from when I was on this SRC, the State Rehab Council, comments and questions that are raised need to be answered as part of the DBVI report to the Rehab Services Administration, who oversees the licensing of the agency.
I'll interject and say that our commissioner has said for this purpose and for the meetings that we have like this, that we're no longer going to consider them public hearing or public comment meetings. It's more of a community conversation about DBVI, so a little less informal. So we'll have a community conversation, if that's okay.
I have a question.
Wait, hold on just a second. So this is the first that I'm hearing of the change, and I've been characterizing it as a public hearing all the way through our promotion in this convention. So I'm a little upset that I was not told that this would not be an official public hearing.
Okay. Well, we can take the questions down. I just that was the guidance given to us.
That's wrong. Well, I understand. Okay, so we will proceed under that, but I am lodging a protest officially that was done underhandedly and is not official business. So I want to make sure that is heard loud and clear by Rick and everybody else who is involved in that decision. All right, so we are opening a community discussion.
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead. Is that Sam?
Yes, this is Sam from Arlington. I wanted to ask about the nonprofit grants, the grants that you provide to, or you offer to nonprofit organizations, because I know you were offering one this year. And so I was wondering what organizations have to do to qualify for those grants and what the criteria are to apply.
We have open application time usually late spring, so you would fill out the application, and then the board would then invite you to present to the board, and then they would determine whether they're going to provide the funds or partial funds or anything like that. So it's just an application process and then a possible presentation to the board. And that comes out, like I said, spring.
Are there any other questions?
Yes, we do.
I have a question in regards to seniors. So in my job, I come upon seniors who will tell me, that they're having either trouble getting services or they're getting extremely minimal services. And these are usually seniors who are losing their vision. I'm curious, because you didn't really mention a whole lot about you did mention your summer program, but I know that y'all have a senior program. And I'm wondering what kind of shape is that program in right now? And with everything going on, is it in danger? And what can I tell these people when they tell me they're getting mobility maybe once a month or something like that, and which is not safe for them. So I'm very concerned about the seniors in Virginia who may need your services, and with everything going on, but especially since I didn't really hear a lot being said about your general senior program.
Right. Well, there's so much more to share about DBVI and in all of the programs. I just picked some highlights given the time constraints to share information. more than willing to talk with you at any time about our rehabilitation teaching program and the services we have for older citizens, for our seniors. That program, just like I said earlier about the finances, that program is not in jeopardy. You know, we're still providing those services. I definitely don't like to hear that people feel they're not getting the services that they need. We do provide, you know, we should provide and mostly do provide timely services. I do know you mentioned O&M once per month. And I don't, it depends on the goals as to how often somebody will meet with someone, and giving the services that we provide in the community, those may be more spaced out and sporadic than if someone attends the center and can have those daily services. So they are a little more spaced out when you want the services in your community. But if there's specific things that people are not getting as part of their services, I would love to hear about those. I would love to be involved and help troubleshoot and make sure they do get the services that they need. Like I said, that program is not in jeopardy. We're continuing on as usual. So if you have more information to share, I would appreciate it, and I can look into it.
And I have one other question.
Yes.
So if a person is in a job right now and they're not a client of yours, has been in the past, but are not a member right now, and if they're going through transition and may need to, for example, they're right now using magnifying technology on the computer, but they're slowly learning how to use screen readers right now. If they need screen reader technology and for it to be set up for work so that they can keep their job, would y'all be doing that, and would they have to open a case with you?
Yes, they would need to open a case, and it would be for job retention. In order for us to provide services, if there's something that the employer is providing, and it would just take maybe a courtesy visit to help them get situated and acclimated to the software or their equipment, then we can have someone do a courtesy visit for that and not open a full case. But if it's something where we're going to need to purchase any type of equipment or make several visits in order to ensure their success, then we would need to open a VR case for job retention.
And how long would that take? How long is it right now? Is it taking for people who need services to get in?
There's not necessarily a time frame. We are promoting that rapid engagement and trying to get people in as quick as we can, not delay eligibility, move forward, get that plan, and then get them the services. Job retention normally gets pushed to the top because we know the importance of retaining that job. So I don't necessarily have a time frame. But the whole goal would be to retain that job. So we would want to move in an urgent fashion to make sure they get the services and tools.
I have a question. This is Teresa, and I have a comment and a question.
Okay.
With the grant process that Sam asked about, I felt that you skirted around that whole thing and didn't say anything about what's required as, like, say, us as a nonprofit, what we would have to have in order to apply. You know, there are certain requirements that if you don't meet, they won't even look at you. So he was basically asking, what does a nonprofit need to have to qualify? and you skirted around that whole thing and just said that there's a process to go through. But I know that there is requirements before you even look at something. And I did not like that, and I did not like the change in what was set up with us as a public hearing. I'm right there with Doug. I want it known that we are not happy about this. And then my question is, I live here in Fredericksburg, and when I first contacted DPVI, I had the most horrible experience of nobody wanting to help me. I was sent from this area to this area to this area, and nobody knew who was going to cover Fredericksburg. And it took me almost 3 months before I got somebody to come and talk to me. And then he was transferred out, and then they had to find somebody else. And I just finally said, forget you, because I was having such a hard time getting assistance. So I want to know what's in place for the rural areas that need the help.
Well, our rural areas should be and are covered as much as any of our territories. So the fact that you may be rural should not have affected your services. And I apologize for that experience. I don't know how to respond other than to apologize. It is not our intentions to for people to have a horrible experience or feel they're getting the runaround or not getting the services that they need. I can look into it further and get you some more information, but I don't really know, what else to say other than that should not have happened, and I apologize.
This is Roseanne Ashby, and I'd like to make a comment. I'm the vice president of ACBVA. Several individuals have come to me with concerns about their experience at the rehabilitation center that you have in Richmond. A rehabilitation center is a wonderful opportunity to teach people skills of blindness and to help them get on their way to being independent. But the reality is that, especially for people who are older or people who become newly blinded, they need a certain level of supports to take the risks they need to take to work toward goals, ambitious goals. And I've had several people say that they do not feel they get sufficient support in that environment so that they can reach toward their goals. And they're concerned about safety issues. I need you to understand that these are serious concerns. They are also saying that they have a concern that if they bring these issues to the forefront, they may not be receiving services, that they may be kind of set aside and not their needs not be addressed. I think this is something that you should be aware of, and I think you need to really think about the fact that rehabilitation is individualized for each person. It's not a one-way works well for everybody. That is just not rehabilitation. It's individualized.
I agree. Thank you for sharing, and we will look further into that.
Hi, my name is Bernard Warwick. Can I say something? I'm on Zoom.
Yes.
Go ahead, please. I'm a federal employee, and I just want to ask a question, a general question about blind federal employees. And first of all, I just want to say I'm thankful for the support I get from the department. As a employed blind person, I've got tremendous support, and I just want to say thank you for that. and I'm concerned about my federal job, and I'm looking for support in the future. So, I just want to, I'm looking for support in the future, and I don't know what's going to happen with my job, but for me and for all the other blind federal employees, you know, what kind of support is there for us, you know, if we are to lose our jobs? That's my question.
All of our services are there for you. We've had two, I don't remember what we called them, kind of sort of town halls for federal employees who may be affected, by the current administration. And so we have waived the cost participation for the federal employees who are affected. And so, you know, you would not need to participate in any cost of services, as well as we're expediting the services to help you, either keep your job or it sounds like, you may be losing that job, to help you find something else that is suitable. So we do have some special things in place right now for federal employees. If you would like to contact us, we'd love to help. And you may already, you said you're getting good support, so you may already be open to us.
I am. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for spending your Sunday here. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Margie DeMars, and I have received services, and I have been to the senior retreat, and they've been wonderful. I wish that more people could go.
Okay, I'm muted.
In Danville, we have a wonderful mobility trainer, Meg Walker, and a wonderful rehab teacher in Jillian Pilcher. However, that being said, especially the mobility trainer, she cannot teach someone how to use a white cane properly by just seeing the person once a month. That just is not possible. So are you telling me that some of our members in our Danville group can come for 1 or 2 weeks for everyday mobility training at the center? That's my
question. It would not be just mobility training.
Yes, I understand that. But
right.
In other words, they'd be able to come but have mobility training every day and with the other training too, which would be great.
Correct. But
is that possible to come for a shorter period of time?
Yes. You come. There's no set time. Just averages, probably around 9 months. Some people come more. Some people stay shorter. If you meet your goals and you're happy with what you've achieved in 4 weeks, it is based on your goals.
Okay.
So you don't have to do a full blown. There's no set time or program.
I'm thinking of a few people that would like to do something like this. Until they learn what their goal is. And who knows, their goal, you're right, may change even while they're there.
Right.
Reach a certain point and said, wait a minute, I'm doing so good. I want to learn more about this or that.
Yes.
So for somebody to sign up right now, how long of a wait would they have to actually attend the school?
We are currently scheduling and have students coming in. Trying to think of the number. We're almost to full capacity. We have some scheduled up to February right now. So it could be around February. If some people decide not to come, it could be sooner. A couple months or so, and that could change. We might get an influx of applications to come to the center, and then it gets pushed out a little more. But we try to have a rolling enrollment to where we can keep people coming in. As someone accomplishes their goals and exits, we can put somebody in that place.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that answer. That at least helps. So if someone signs up now, they could feel fairly confident that they could get in sometime early next year.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I do not see any other questions. I'm not seeing.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. It seems like there could be more services. I'm worried about the people we're not getting, especially older people, but also people who are not vocationally oriented at the moment. I know when I couldn't work anymore. This is Doug, by the way. I know that when I couldn't work anymore because of loss of vision, I was not sure what I could do, and you know, I didn't have competence and I didn't have confidence, and so I wasn't sure if I wanted to jeopardize my SSDI by going into a vocational goal setting, going into the vocational thing. I'm wondering, could we partner with you in, do you think it's possible for us to partner with you in approaching the General Assembly to provide more funding for non-vocational rehabilitation services? And would that help deliver more frequent services to older people, and also more money for outreach, so that we could make sure that we were reaching those people who need services, who don't feel like they're vocationally oriented yet?
That's a great idea. Thank you for sharing. I cannot make that decision, but our communications coordinator and commissioner, Deborah Collard, is on here. She's a colleague of mine with DBVI, and she's making sure to take down notes. Is that something we can address with them to see if that's something possible to partner with you all on? We have, and just something I thought of when you were talking, commercials, the TV and the advertising and commercials campaigns that we did were targeted for our older citizens, for our rehabilitation teaching clients. And the commercials ran at certain times, like during the news and things that, people 55 and older, those shows or things they might be listening to or watching. So we have recognized we need to get, like I said, the word out and not be the best kept secret. So we are trying to target that population to get our information out there. So again, if you start targeting that brings more people in, and then you have to look inwards and see what additional resources we might need. So I appreciate you bringing that up, and we will discuss it with leadership.
Okay. The other question I have, unless there's other questions, the only other question is, since this is not an official hearing, what alternatives do we have to express ourselves, to DBVI in an official capacity? It's, if I remember correctly, when I was on the State Rehab Council, there were public hearings where you could go and talk, and someone took notes, and that was official business of DBVI. And there also, we could make written statements that would become the official record, the public record of DBVI. Is there still that opportunity for us to make written comments? Yeah, that's the question.
Yes, we're not doing away with public comment meetings or anything like that. We just, and I am fairly new to this position and this side of things. And I don't want to put Deborah on the spot, but she's been a little more involved in some of the public meetings. And I don't know if you know of any that are scheduled. I can definitely get that for you. I just have to say that that's not, I have been a participant and helped out in some of the public meetings, but it's not my, and Deborah unmuted and come on camera. So do you have anything to share about that, or should we just get information and bring it back to him?
Thank you, Kathy. And thank you everyone for attending today. We can do both. We can get some more information back to your group about that. But the things that I know of that are official and on an ongoing basis, so they roll pretty much annually and quarterly. And Doug, you've mentioned several times our SRC meetings, and others of you have mentioned our Board for the Blind and Vision Impaired. Those two bodies meet quarterly. During each one of their meetings, there is always a time for public comment. The public is always welcome to attend those meetings. We post those meetings at the agency. We post them on our website. They're also posted on the Virginia Town Hall website. And I would encourage all of you to become newsletter recipients from the agency. When you go to our website, you can select which types of newsletters you would like to receive. I would click all the boxes to be sure that you're getting all the information, but there's particular newsletters that announce the board meetings, so you'd be, you know, notified of those by email when they're happening. And most of the time there's a virtual component to those meetings, so you don't necessarily have to be in Richmond and be present. You could join virtually and provide your comment, your public comment at those meetings. There's also several times during the year, and I think it usually runs with the governor's budget and the biennium, so it would be every 2 years or so, that the agency publishes our state plan. And it's a combined state plan with our other Virginia workforce partners. When this is published on the town hall website, there's always opportunity for public comment. So you can always go there and put your comments in that platform. That's also available. And of course, as Kathy mentioned, we always are taking comments on a regular basis. So if you have a comment you'd like to share, you can feel free to send that in an email to the commissioner or one of our deputy commissioners, and they will take that as official business that you've provided a comment, and they will get back to you on that. I hope that gives you a little bit more information, Doug, that you were looking for, and ways that you can continue to interact and collaborate with the agency.
It does. And I offer the opportunity for people to contact ACB of Virginia through the info@acbva.org so that we can gather, you know, we can know what's going on and, you know, what concerns you have, so that we can continue to advocate on your behalf with DBVI. Are there any other questions or comments? Yes, there is one.
I'm sorry, this is Margie Damaris again. I went on, I do receive those messages when the public meetings are held. And I tried joining one last year and the link did not work. And then I tried calling in and that did not work either. The phone never rang. So I just a heads up on that, but I ended up sending an email to
Rick Mitchell, and he was gracious. He answered me, but my idea was Meg Walker had helped me start the Danville Low Vision Group, our Southside Out of Sight group, which we actually named after I started the group. And I wanted to present to DBVI that if a member of our ACBVA contact their local rehab teacher, that they will help in starting new groups throughout the state. Because my thought was that not only does it help all the low vision, especially in rural areas, but starting new groups for our ACBVA, being affiliates, would help our membership, help spread the word more to help more people, and that DBVI being involved, we would send you members that join our groups, and you can recommend, your teachers can recommend their students in those areas to come to our support groups. And this is how I started the Southside Out of Sight group with the help of Meg Walker. I told her that if she ran across anyone that wanted to start a group, please, we wanted to start one in Danville, that I wanted, we didn't have any services like that. And she said, I'll do that. I'll send out a letter to all my people that passed, that I have served in the past and right now, and I'll tell them to contact you if they're interested. That's how our group started. So if we work together like that, the DBVI helping the ACBVA start groups, if we contact, it would be good if you put all your rehab facilitators on board with helping start new groups throughout the state, because it would help all the visually impaired people in our state, it would help our organization, ACBVA, and it would also help DBVI receive and cover people that are not receiving services. And by giving them permission to come to our meetings at least once in a while, so we can tell them who are our new members and they need help. One of our members joined. She has been low vision for 22 years, and our group was the one that got her services after 22 years, and she's totally blind now. And so it's very important. And I know all of you want to help other low vision people in our state. And this would be a good plan to set in place where we could feel confident that if we contact our local DBVI rehab teacher, that they can help us start new groups throughout the state and reach more people.
Okay. Yes, thank you for sharing. And I was aware of Meg Walker's assistance and helping you with that group. And, you know, it's something that maybe we could replicate statewide to get some groups, low vision groups together. We have tried sometimes to get, I guess, more of what you would call a support group, sort of, for some individuals. And we've got a group, a recent group started in Bristol that has some people attending that may be interested in learning more about you all. So we could collaborate, hopefully, and kind of group our people, our shared resources, and see what we can come up with. So I will get your information from Meg, and we can continue the conversation on how we can help individuals, you know, join the appropriate groups and resources.
Hi, this is Teresa again, and I recently started losing my vision about 6 years ago. And when that happened, I had no information whatsoever. I didn't know who to talk to, what to learn, or anything. And I was wondering, do you have some kind of a system set up with the ophthalmology departments and centers and all those doctors to have information about DBVI in their offices so that when someone does start losing their vision, that information is there for them so that they're aware that you're even out there. It took me a long time to find you. And since then I've, you know, joined ACBVA and I've learned so much more, but for somebody that's new to losing vision, they need that information and that support system when they find out. And that's not available at any of the doctor's offices. So I don't know if that's something that you could help with or if that's something that we need to go to our delegates and things like that. But I thought that would be something worth bringing up.
Yeah, and we can help too on our end. And we do have regular communications with a lot of optometrists and ophthalmologists, and that's a big source of our referrals come from eye doctors. But I also know there's a lot more who may not be aware of us. And we do, we have a our director, Dominique Wallace, of our Low Vision Services, tries to keep in communication with the eye doctors. We've had tables and things set up at conventions for the optometrists to try and get the word out. One of our services, and two, we need low vision directors. Low vision examiners. If you have any ideas, other than, you know, I mean, we send letters to doctors about us and our services. We've dropped by and left our brochures in one of the little stands and say, you know, when you empty it, please, here's the contact person to come bring some more. We could mail them out the brochures so that the different vision doctors would have those so that they can inform people. We try to get the word out to the doctors. I know there's still plenty who may not know about us or understand the services that we provide. So we will revisit that within the agency, of course, to try and increase the visibility of our services amongst the vision doctors.
Any other questions?
Hello, this is James Nestor, also from the Danville Southside Out of Sight Group. I have a question. I just kind of wanted to piggyback a little bit of what Margie said. And I've had a little different experience where a lot of the people around here have. I kind of want to give a praise report to a lot of the DVI personnel. Everyone I've ever dealt with goes beyond the call of duty. I mean, they're heavily involved with our group. We're growing by leaps and bounds. They're bringing us new members, and we're working on getting new clients to them. I do agree with Margie. It'd be nice if that's more facilitated around the state, because I think some of our DVI personnel, they're not just doing a job, but they're using their personal time to help us as well. And I could go on talking about it. I did my training at VRCVI back in 2014, so I'm sure some things are different now, but I learned so many things, and I was very apprehensive before I went there. So getting to that point and going, it may take a group like us to help someone along and help introduce them to things and help them be interested. And I said, many that I could think, there's Becky Keller here at the facility here today. She wasn't even my instructor, and she she remembered me. So I just want to give a shout out and thank you for all the personnel who's been there for me and everyone else. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nesser, for your positive comments, and you know, and I love to hear those, and I hate to hear the bad, and I really I would love to do something you know, to improve and to make sure everyone has a great experience. So I encourage you all to share. I'm trying to find the chat. I'm not seeing a chat. I was going to put my email in, but I'm not seeing it. So
we don't have the chat available.
Okay. Okay. Well, I can tell you it's Kathy, Kathy, dot Malone, Malone, at dbvi.virginia, spelled out, .gov, G-O-V. So good and bad, feel free to share it. Definitely want to work on the bad and continue the good. So, and I appreciate all the comments. We don't take them with a grain of salt. So, yes.
Deputy Commissioner, this is Bernard Worwe again.
Yes.
I just wanted to say, I didn't want to mention his name, but Isaac Crisp is my VR counselor. I know he's moved on, but he's the one that's really supported me, and he's just the best. I just want to put a good word in for him.
Great. Thank you. We will pass that along.
Okay. Thank you.
We have one more.
Hi, I'm Laura. Hopefully this won't be a, gee, that could be an email comment, but so I'm a social worker, and I do a lot with outpatient clinics. I used to work in dialysis and in currently in pediatrics at Bon Secours. One of the things I've noticed, because I work on a social work team, and what we like to do when there's a new service in the area is to kind of get them to come and give us an informational meeting. And then we kind of, sometimes the doctors or other providers are included. Sometimes they join us. Sometimes we can kind of whittle it down and represent it to them. So I wonder if DVBI has done anything kind of parallel to that, like a lunch and learn, or just like a Q&A for doctors, like going to Virginia Eye Institute or going to VCU. I mean, those are places that probably know already, but maybe like a PACE center or something like that, or senior services, where you have an audience there, and you can use the opportunity in a rural area to kind of get that information out, or even connect with a social worker from a program that can help disseminate that.
Absolutely, yes. We do that, and Deborah Collard collects our information. We call them on outreaches. So each field worker, as part of, you know, they are providing services, but we also require that they do some outreach, and they do attend and present, we call in services, to the PACE programs you mentioned, the centers, the SEALs, the Centers for Independent Living, doctor's offices, schools, you know, wherever we can get in and talk, we are more than willing to get in and talk about DBVI. And like I said, that is a requirement for them to do so many each year, and where we have field staff do it. So there's boots on the ground, you know, several people out there in all the nooks and crannies of Virginia, that's trying to have these conversations anytime we're invited, or we may reach out and say, hey, you know, can we come give you some more information? So if there's anybody that has anybody on here that has someone in mind that may would want us to come speak, please shoot me an email and let me know, and we'll get someone out there.
I'm going to shoot on back of that. I'm Meredith, and we both work for Bon Secours. And so my biggest thing is I wish in some sort what I see every day, because I'm have a vision and hearing and problem. I have ushers. They love to come to me to ask for referrals and questions, and because I seem to be the expert, but I'm not. But we'll have patients come in that are blind, or patients that come in that are deaf. And so many of these hospitals don't have the resources or the equipment. It just hurts me to death to see someone in a room without Braille assistance to be able to find a nurse, to call the nurse, because the room is not accessible. is there some way that we can provide them, our area hospitals, so when patients come in, this way we can both educate the staff, we can also introduce DBVI to the patient. It can just be something all around so that they can have the independence to make their own medical decisions without them being directed to their family members because they're unable to read the material or it's not put in a conducive material like for them to read on their screen readers. I mean, it's just, there's a list of things, but the most important is being able to be seen as an adult, as a consenting, making your own medical decisions. And so, long story short, I just wish we could do, I can help you with it, doing some in-services, but I wish that we, because I'm a case manager, but I wish we could do something in the hospitals that when somebody comes in the ER, they can have, I don't know, Braille for their call bell or whatever, so that we can do that. But it, I know that's a long shot, but it's always been a mission of mine because I hate seeing people not getting the care and being seen as a full individual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could, connect. We can even do a presentation for the hospital ER that you're talking about, how to interact with someone who is blind or vision impaired or deaf blind when they come in, just some basics. Do a walkthrough and see, give some comments on, places they may put something in Braille or just some suggestions. So, we do like to do those things as well. So if you had that, it sounds like you have a specific hospital or emergency room in mind. Again, if you want to share that, we can reach out and see what we can do.
Great. And I think I heard other people saying they'd be willing to do in-service. I know that we used to, occasionally we would go out and do at nursing homes or hospitals or something like that. With the staff, we would do a how to meet a blind person kind of a thing.
Yes.
We haven't done it in a while, but we probably could work with DBVI and put together something that we could take out to, help them or work with them to deliver to staffs so they're more welcoming to people who are blind or low vision and deafblind.
Yeah, and sometimes those conversations maybe increases their comfort level or decreases their fears. When we just have a simple conversation and share some of that information, so it takes down maybe some of those walls of communication and barriers that we run into.
All right, it's right at closing time, I believe. So. Kathy and Deborah, thank you so much for being on the firing line and being with us today. We welcome you, we also want to make sure that the services that you guys are that you know where we are as constituents, in terms of approaching the services for DBVI. So
yes.
We look forward to continuing those, making sure that there's a continuous conversation between us and you and that, we can try to, bridge the gaps and open new spaces and collaborate in the future. So thank you very, very much for being with us. And as someone said, give up your Sunday thank you so much. So let's give them a round of applause for being here.
Thank you. We appreciate the collaboration and look forward to further conversations. And like I said, any of you all feel free to shoot me an email, reach out.
And that's Kathy with a K, correct?
Correct.
Okay, good. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And everybody said thank you. All right. I want to reiterate, this is Doug, and I want to reiterate that if you have any concerns or questions about DBVI services, please feel free to contact us at info@acbva.org and express yourself, and we'll talk, and we'll get something together, and try to be in communication with DVVI on a regular basis to address some of the things that we've talked about here. If there are no other questions,